Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Gregory Crawford on Basketball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night at 10 p.m., and we bring on some great guests on a regular basis. Tonight is that case. Get to that in just a second. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at WC Hoops. And let's see if there's anything else I forgot. Not really, because I don't want to take up this guy's time very much, because he's a terrific guest and he joins us the first Wednesday of every month, which this is, by the way. It's September 7th today. And it is Kip Ione, the men's basketball coach at Willamette University in beautiful Salem, Oregon, a member of the Northwest Conference. Kip, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Greg. Just got done with our first team meeting of the year, and you know those are always exciting times to get to launch and see everybody back on campus and raring to go. Glad to be back on with you. It's been too long.
Yes, it has. We took a little time off in the summer, but you'll be on every first Wednesday of the month. And, Kip, I want to start out by asking you, talking about summer, what's maybe something our listeners would enjoy hearing that you did this summer that is not involved in the basketball world that you had a lot of fun doing, maybe with
right.
your family?
Right. Well, you know, I'm from Billings, Montana originally. So my dad is from American Samoa, and my mom is a cowgirl from North Dakota, and they somehow met in Montana. So I had a chance this summer to take my family here from Salem back to Flathead Lake up in Kalispell, Montana, with my mom's side of the family. Her cousin has a lake house up there. Something we don't get to do a lot as a family is get together. My brother, who's an associate head football coach at Montana State, was able to join us. So kind of a mini family reunion. My kids got out on the lake, jumped around, and had a great time. So seeing the scenery in Montana is always impressive and always a great time to kind of connect back with the wild and live a little rugged and raw, but also be able to sleep in a nice house at night. So
a very underrated state, I might add.
That's right. Absolutely.
Got a lot to it, and a lot of people that haven't been there, Kip, what would you tell them about if they're thinking of going to Montana?
I think Montana, you're going to get a chance to just meet genuine folks. People are who they are and who they tell you they are in Montana. That's why one of the reasons it's a great place to grow up is Montanans have a great sense of self and loyalty to their family. And that's one of the reasons I'm so privileged to be where I'm at today is my upbringing in the state and being able to take that with me out here to our second home out here in Oregon. And I think just physically, geographically, you won't find a more diverse experience in nature, whether it's in Glacier Park in the northwest corner of the state all the way out to the plains and battle the Little Bighorn battlefield out there past Billings on your way to Hardin. You can get to Yellowstone National Park. You can get to Canada. Montana's got anything you want if you enjoy nature, wildlife, and just real genuine people.
Very good. Great job. Okay, Kip, I've always wanted to be a comedian. It's not too late, I don't think. But
that's
so
right.
I've always said that the difference between a Division III basketball player and a Division I player is the Division I player is asking the coaches about the uniforms, and the Division III players are asking the coaches about what classes can make me better. So there I've alienated all the Division I people. But
that's
how
right.
do you balance? You're in a great school academically,
mm-hmm.
world-renowned. How do you balance the academics with the fact that you do want to win every basketball
right.
game you play, and your players do as well?
Well, I think that question is a great lead-in to – you know, trying to give Division III an identity like we try to do with our recruits. And the main thing you want to stress to them is, yes, Division III in Willamette University is demanding academically, demanding as a person and the growth it forces you to have. But at the same time, we want to be demanding as an athletic department and as a basketball program and ask that you excel and grow as a player along with the required and non-negotiable growth that you have as a person and as a student. So I think the benefit for a Division III player, especially here at Willamette, is I'm going to make the basketball schedule after I see their class schedules. It's you know, some other scholarship places and some bigger levels as far as classification. You're going to get told what time to take classes based upon the schedule the coach has made for lifting and hoops. Here, we've got to be the ones in the office as a staff that are flexible and pivot our day and our plan for you as a player around what has to be number one, and that's your academics. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to have great practices. That doesn't mean we don't expect you to take part in your strength and conditioning program. That doesn't mean we're not going to have player development sessions in season. But it does mean that you're going to dictate the schedule of that based upon what you have to get done in the classroom. So, it's a great question and a great focus. I think they can get lost in the D3 message sometimes, but one that we want to make sure everybody out there for our school and our conference and our level, we're going to be great basketball players as well. We just know where the priorities, where that has to come into at the end of the day.
Kip, without giving away any proprietary information, tell us a little bit about that team meeting tonight and how did it go? Obviously, it went well with you at the helm, but what was kind of the feeling in that room? Give us a feel for it.
Yeah. I appreciate you giving me a little platform here, but I think the one thing I wanted to do, this is my 8th team meeting as a head coach, and I wanted to be less me and more of them. So instead of me preaching from the mountaintops or these are the rules, these are the expectations of the season, these are the things we're going to be demanding about, I told them tonight and the captains to give us the contract. So our team tonight gave us 3 things that as coaches we can be very, very demanding about. We call it blackout rules. We're not a coaching staff that wants to scream and cuss and holler 24 hours a day. We want to coach and get kids better. But there are 3 things the team told us tonight that if they continue to do those things, we can black out a little bit and go a little old school on them. There's also 4 things the team stated they expect out of themselves results-wise for the season. So at any point in time during the year, I can point to the contract they gave me. Not that they're doing, so they're not trying to do things for me or for the coaches. They're doing it for each other and what they stated as their own personal accountability that they want to uphold. So we did a lot more of that. It's probably as little talking as I've ever done in a meeting. Each one of our 3 captains had an activity that they had to take the team through. We got some administrative stuff done. But at the same time, as a coach, you'd like to think you're going to set the world on fire with your meeting agenda. But I told the guys tonight, we didn't win any games tonight. What we did do is establish what we expect from each other, when we expect it, and how we expect it done. And that's always a step in the right direction.
Kip, the contact you can have with players on the floor is somewhat restricted in Division III.
Right.
And I think we've talked about that before. But as far as coming to your office or getting out and seeing your student athletes on campus, do you like them to drop by every single day to say hello, or do you set times when they come in and meet with you?
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think all coaches are a little different. Obviously, you'd love to have as much face time as possible. But at the same time, when we recruit them, we tell them we're not Batman. I don't follow them to class. I don't check in on their social media accounts 24 hours a day. I'm not driving up and down the streets of Salem on Saturday nights. What I do expect them to do is be professional and be the men that we want them to grow into. So if we do text the time to come by the office, if we do expect them to turn a form in for school in the office, et cetera, that we'll see them, that they'll respond. I think our captains do a great job of organizing, our preseason and our off seasons. Since, like you mentioned, D3 is very, very strict on the amount of times and when and where we can actually be on the court, what day of the month of every single, all the segments of the year. So, we try to get some team things in. We're very active at other games for the programs in the athletic department. The staff is going to be at every soccer game we can be, the volleyball game, the football games. And, when the team's there together, we're always sitting together. And that's the hard part, I think, of Division III as a coach, is there's a lot of things you'd love to do and love to require them to do, but you can't. So there's things that we expect that they do together without us present that kind of builds that family atmosphere, and then we can join in the fun on the appropriate days.
Have you, and maybe it isn't even within the rules, I know the rules somewhat, but have you ever taken the team away at when you can officially practice for a couple of days, what I guess we'd call in the old school bonding session?
Right.
Or is that something
you
never thought about doing?
A team. there is a team retreat segment every year for us, but it has to be, like you mentioned, when the official practices start. We can't do it outside of time, except there you can take a foreign trip every X amount of years, and we've done that to Costa Rica in the past. But I think those are huge, those team retreat, those team building segments that you do in season. A lot of times are just as important, if not more so, than you're on the court practicing of your scheme. Those are times for the kids to really get to know you as a coach, to get to know each other at a different level. And you know, like we preach to our guys, you don't have to love each other every single day, but you do need to respect and see each other every single day. And I don't mean, you know, just in the line of vision seeing. I mean, you need to really know the person across from you. So we'll spend a lot of time on those activities and those times when we're on the road together, really trying to foster that. And I think a lot, you know, I think any coach that is worth a damn is trying to do that in, you know, various ways, different ways, and ways that'll engage as many of your players as possible.
Maybe not the best player on the floor, but in your expertise as a coach, has it gotten the most important position on the floor as the point guard?
Boy, it's got to be up there. You know, I think with as much as, especially in our case where we don't want to be in charge of every single possession as a staff and call and dictate every single set that happens, we want to be able to trust our handlers with that and trust the kids to let the game flow and react and read and make decision action choices a lot throughout the course of the game. You'd better have a quality point guard. You know, I think we have three of them on our roster, which is it's a benefit for me. And I think we have some other versatile kids that are kind of hybrid handler forward types that can do the same thing. But I mean, you're right, especially with the amount of pressure you see, whether it's in half court or full court in today's game, the amount of ball screen actions that take place throughout the game for a ton of different offenses, your point guard had better have a good feel for not only what they're doing, but also what we're supposed to be doing overall as a group. That's the thing we've really tried to go to school on as a staff this offseason is decision action. There's a lot of times in basketball we ask kids to go do work and go do drills that are the action, like whether it's a crossover or a bounce pass, but that action only happens after they make a decision. And it's really training that decision-making process that I don't think I've done a very good job of in the last couple of years as a coach. And we want to really expand our kids' ability to make the right decision leading into the action we've drilled into them.
Kip, I'm always fascinated by this question. Do you, in your own mind, maybe you share it, maybe you don't, maybe you tuck it away in that vault, put together before the season starts, is this is where we'd like to be on December 20th, this is where we'd like to be January 20th, this
right.
is where we'd like to be February 20th, or do you not do that?
No, that's a great point. I think early in my career, probably my first 3 years, if you'd asked that question, I could have given you every calendar of every install we were going to do through February. But then I found myself being a slave to that calendar, and maybe we weren't ready to move on to Section B and Section C. We were pretty bad at A, but I was moving us through it just to take care of what I envisioned. I've tried to adjust that in myself as a coach. And yeah, administratively, you got to know your practice times all the way through February. You got to know your travel plans. You got to know all those administrative process things. But as far as the growth of the team and where we're at offensively, where we're at defensively, I've tried to change, you know, that script to more an evolutionary idea. So hopefully by the time we get to our alumni exhibition game, we're at this point growth-wise, and then we'll reevaluate. So instead of saying, once we get to there, we're going to do this. Once we get to this pick-and-roll defense, and we're going to put this one in 3 weeks later, I've tried to build into that staff evaluations. Hey, where are we? Do we feel comfortable moving on, or do we just got to reteach what we're already doing? And that way, I'm not such a slave to the schedule, and I'm also incorporating better the three people that work with me that are so much smarter than me anyway. And make me look good, and that's my assistants. You know, I think in the past I tried to shoulder too much of the planning load and didn't get enough of their input. And that as a coach, that's what you're trying to do is grow as a coach as well. So hopefully we've done that and set up a better working relationship with all of us as far as the process we're going to use to push the guys forward.
When you walk in your front door at home, or maybe you go in the side door or the back door, but what kind of brings a smile to your face about this 16-17 team you're going to have and what might cause you a little sleepless night right now about this team.
Right. Well, I think the thing that lets me sleep pretty well and be excited about the year is I've got a group of guys that have been through the highs and the lows. You know, 2 years ago we made the NWC semifinals. Last year we fell short of expectations. So I don't think there's anything that they can experience that'll be a surprise to them. I think they have experience being a program that wins and has the expectation to win, but they've also experienced, hey, man, that was a really tough loss. That was a really poor performance that we didn't see coming. How do we get through that? So I think that gives me some calm and some ease in terms of our core group of guys that has been with us for the last 2 years has really experienced a ton. And there's a lot to be said for coaches can say things, predict things, but until the team lives it as a group and lives it together, it's really hard to predict how they're going to react and respond. So those things, that's exciting for me. The things that keep me up, that's just our league. You know, you can say a school and I can tell you five things I think they probably do better than us, which might not all be true, but we play in a really tough conference. With a lot of good coaches, a lot of good players, and, you know, we can go down the list now and I can tell you the problems PLU is going to give us, the Whitworth problems, the Linfield problems, and hopefully we're on the same thing for those teams and we're going to give them some issues too, but that keeps me up all the time, and I think any coach will tell you the same thing.
You know, and that's a great point there in that any sport, you know, you look at maybe 2 years ago, Puget Sound was so down in football and bring in a new coach, and now they're having success. And the only reason I bring that up is there are just fabulous coaches in the Northwest Conference
right.
who are dedicated to Division III and want to be there and love the student-athletes. It's loaded with good coaches in every sport.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more on it. It makes for very difficult 40 minutes a night when it's game week, but it also, you know, I think my growth as a coach and, you know, my overall knowledge of the game has been expanded just by watching film of my counterparts in this league. You know, the stuff that certain people do on offense, the stuff other people do on defense, some side out of bounds, the way people, just the way some people do shoot-arounds, how they schedule their travel. We've stolen some ideas from other coaches in our league. So I think you're pretty lucky as a coach. When you can be in a conference that you know is forcing you to get better, you know, everybody would love to, you know, just dominate and win year after year after year and make it easy, but really you're not growing. You know, this conference has forced me, you know, to eat a lot of humble pie and get back to work every single night to try to catch up to the coaches we're trying to beat.
Kip, I'm intrigued always by the low percentage nationwide on all levels, men and women of college basketball at the free throw line. What do you do personally and your coaching staff to try and make your players better free throw shooters?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the number one thing we're trying to focus on is creating tension when they're at the line. You know, I'm trying to get away from 30-point evaluations of their shot and worrying about this angle of your wrist and the elbow, and I think that really clouds their brains. I think if we can get them to a consistent stroke that their body's comfortable with, we should leave it alone, and then we just have to recreate the tension that happens when you shoot a free throw in a basketball game. So whether that's the standard stuff of, you know, the team's on the line and they're going to make a free throw or not and they're going to run based upon that, or, you know, holding them to some accountability stuff their own self when they're in there by themselves, what are you really writing down? Are you writing down your makes per day? Are you forcing yourself to do burpees or lines if you miss? I think that's the best approach to it, not that we've solved it by any means. I can give you a lot of game film where some missed free throws cost us a game. But I think that's the best approach is to make sure the kid is comfortable with their actual free throw routine. Don't mess with that. Just try to create as much stress around them when they practice as possible.
As the head coach, and I know you always very humble person, admire your staff. So together, what are you working on right now? September 7th, tomorrow, in 2 hours, it'll be September 8th. But what are you working on right now for this season?
Yeah, great question. And I think that's probably what has led and dominated the majority of our time together as a staff, you know, with Nathan Colville, Jonathan Willis, Kevin McRae, Bubba Ludke, my assistants. We've spent a ton of hours talking about process. And what I mean by that is it's very easy for a coach to say, man, our point guard can't go left. We got to get him to go left. Well, actually, the current, you know, taking that point guard from point A, where he can't go left, to the finished product at Z, where he can go left, there needs to be a process there. There needs to be an actual who is doing what, when are we doing it, how are we doing it, how are we evaluating it process. Otherwise, we can't really demand the excellence in that result. So what I've spent a lot of time, and I found the fault in myself, is not having clear-cut expectations and process for all my assistants to follow in every aspect of our program. So whether that's player development, whether that's administrative travel, whether that's scouting, whether that's video exchange, and all the different things that we have to do together as a group, there needs to be an actual document that says this is who's doing what, this is when they're doing it, and this is what coach expects. Then I can actually demand the execution from them that I want. Before, I don't think I had enough of that defined for my staff, and I have a phenomenal staff. So the analogy I've always used, Greg, is if we were all assigned as a group of coaches to pull a dead train down a track, but we didn't say when we were going, we didn't say who was pulling what rope, we didn't say what time to get there, we didn't say which direction to pull, we wouldn't move that train. And that's the process that we've tried to alleviate over hours, and I'm sure mind-numbingly boring for some of them. But now that we have that, there's more time for us to really focus on our guys, because we know that this coach is taking care of the hotels and the planes. We know this coach is taking care of the inventory, the practice gear, and the team shoes. We know that the player development schedule is set and ready to roll once the 15th hits. And nobody's overlapping jobs. Nobody's doing somebody's job for them. Nobody's short-circuiting their own job. We're all flowing together and pulling that train with our own rope down the track in the same direction. So that's been huge for us, and it's ongoing. You know, that's my goal, is once our first practice hits, there's no nonsense behind the scenes in terms of a paper not turned in, of a copy not sent to the right person, of a meal not planned right. I want all that done, ready, streamlined, so we can be the best coaches on the floor that we can be.
Yeah, very good. I love that. I like the business approach. I love sports business, and that's a business approach. Kip, you have a great boss in Val Cleary. I know her personally. Great communicator. She's fabulous. Beyond Val, do the administrators talk to you a lot? And I'm not saying they have to. I'm just interested. You know, do they talk about the academic side? What do they talk to you about, even all the way up to the president when you see
him? I think what I'm lucky enough to have been here as a player, as an assistant coach, and now as a head coach, I know kind of the chain of command for anything that pops up. Whether it's on the academic side, I know how to get to a tutor. I know how to get to Matt Barrero, the director of the Learning Center. Whether it's housing, I know who we have now as a director of Res Life. I know Ed Whipple, the dean of campus life here, brand new hire, is a phenomenal guy who's been at our basketball camps to see how we're doing, evaluated our facilities. I know where to go for Rob Passage, our facilities director, Judy Gordon, our compliance director. Those people are, I probably talk to them as much, if not more, than my players on a day-to-day basis to get things done and set up for my guys. So I think any coach that's successful and wants to have an enjoyable experience in their day-to-day has to know the various people on campus that are your allies. And, I'm lucky enough in Willamette, there's a ton of those people. Like you mentioned, from Val Cleary, my boss, all the way through, you know, Peg Swadner, the women's basketball coach who's in the office next door to me. We have a great working relationship. And if we didn't, that could really bog down both of our programs. And so we're lucky enough that we both really work well together in scheduling and idea sharing, and that, you know, that kind of exists up and down the hallway here in Sparks Athletic Department at Willamette and also on the campus.
Okay, who is your opening game against, and what are you thinking about that right now?
University of Texas Tyler comes out here all the way to play us out here in Oregon, and I already know they've got a monster in the post that's keeping me up at night. So, you know, how the Bearcats are going to take care of 6'9", 260 on the block, we good thing we have 2 to 3 months to get ready for that. But, that's a quality program. We're lucky this year. We've only got one real road trip. We got a ton of games in Cone Fieldhouse and Gordie James Court. So we can kind of put a fence up around it and take care of business at home should set us up for a really tough conference season.
How do you like to handle your pre-league games? Are you looking at combinations on the floor? Are you looking at a starting five? I guess all of
right.
the above, or how do
right.
you take those pre-league games?
Well, I think we're lucky enough that we typically have an alumni game and another exhibition before any non-conference games that count. So definitely, as you mentioned, in those two exhibition-type scrimmage setups, we're going to experiment a little bit, try to find not necessarily the best lineups, but the best response squads. So who's our energy group if we're flat? Who's our press group if we need a quick turnover? Who's our scoring group? Who's our zone-busting group? Those type of thoughts that go into our head as a group. And then also just see guys react. You know, see them react to game pressure, a bad official's call, somebody more athletic than them blocks their shot. And that hopefully going into that first weekend of, say, a Texas Tyler and a really good Northwest Christian squad, that'll have us, at least as a staff, with as many bullets in our gun, to so to speak, for as many possible situations that come up. So that's hopefully that's the setup. We'll see when the whistle blows and that first jump ball starts.
In conclusion tonight, an awesome job per usual, Kip. You're just a fabulous guest. I've been doing this media stuff in sports, not so much on the radio, but I've been doing it for now 56 years. I started writing for the Selwood Bee when
That's
I was
impressive.
10. So, but anyway, and you're fabulous. One of the best I've ever interviewed. But in conclusion, how do you feel as a whole about the game of basketball? I know we all love it. I think
mm-hmm.
it's gotten a little bit too rough, but that's just me. And that's
mm-hmm.
coming from an ex-official, 25 years of high school. But how do you feel
right.
about it?
You know, I love that the game has gotten back to some creativity. I think the Warriors have driven a lot of that. I think the spacing that they've driven down from the NBA all the way through college to high school, the spacing that everyone's kind of, you know, it's just like football and any other sport. The best stuff gets copied and kind of trickles down. I think the Warriors have been great for basketball, and I think the small ball lineups that really put a premium on skill sets and well-rounded games, and the more you can do, the more you can be out there. But it's also lessened all of the control from us crazy coaches on the sidelines. There's not as much of calling every single possession. There's more giving guys concepts that are the real fundamentals of the game. If you got two people on you, pass the damn ball. If you're open, shoot it. If not, get it to somebody who is. And the way we go about doing that has evolved, but I really like watching basketball at the highest levels right now because there's so much good, there's so much spacing, there's so much ball movement, and I think it's gotten away from some of the stuff that was plaguing it maybe 10, 15 years ago in terms of just isolation ball. There's a lot more. The Warriors have shown everybody that if you move the ball, if you beat a guy one-on-one to get your teammate an open shot, that's a good thing. And I think before it was beat a guy one-on-one to get yourself a shot. Now it's more let's get a kick, let's get a lob dunk, let's get somebody an easy based on my skill set.
Very good. We will talk to you again the first Wednesday in October.
Love
and
it.
In the meantime, have a great fall, and I'll probably catch up with you in person before that time, but look forward to talking to you in October. And I know you got a lot of other sports going on at Willamette, a great school, a great town, and keep up the good work, Kip, and great job tonight. Fabulous interview.
Thanks, Greg. Always love being with you. Have a good one.
You betcha. That's Kip Ione, the head men's basketball coach at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, a member of the Northwest Conference Division III. Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening. Had a big audience tonight. Tell the world about this program, and I know you absolutely enjoyed hearing from Kip Ione and all of our guests on here. And don't forget to make your free throws. Good night.